Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. We have Golden Tonsil Skeeter Reddings with us in the studio. We have Glenn Quartermain, the man with very small hands, in the studio. We have Josh Garlop, our wonderful producer and the master of all sound effects, a little too willing to go to the sound effects, but anyway, we like that about him. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call Gambler's Helpline on 1-800-858-858 if you're running into any difficulties. Okay, guys, we're going to try and tip a winner. We're going to try and run the ruler over the round. And we're going to talk about a few breaking news stories, the main one being this morning. Sean Darcy extends at Fremantle. He's going to be at the club until 2024. That's a significant signature for the club to get.
Great news. Probably top, in form-wise, probably top three at the moment in Ruckman. I think he's a terrific player. He's gone forward this year. I think that's been very influential in him, taking a step forward, his ability to go forward and kick goals, but maturing as a Ruckman, growing into his body, so to speak, and I think it's a really important signature for Freo, really important. Might be the most important signature of all.
Possibly, and the thing about Darcy this year I've noticed is that he's had injury concerns in the past. Maybe he's getting to know his body better. Maybe he's had a better preseason. Whatever he's doing, as he gets older, as a lot of players do, they're starting to know what they can do to push themselves and what they need to do to get themselves up each week. And he was injury prone, let's be honest, for the first part of his career. Whether he's lost weight, doesn't seem to have, but he looks like he's in better control of his game and his fitness, and that's terrific. As you said, he's easily inside the top five ruckmen in the competition at the moment. Not sure it'll have any effect on the likes of an Adam Chera saying, I'll stay as well, but it's a validation for what the Dockers are doing at Coburn.
So they're building a bit of momentum with these signatures, though, aren't they? They're rolling them out now. Switkowski signed on earlier in the week. Not that Sam Switkowski is a huge name to get to the line, but they've had a few in recent weeks. I reckon they'll be trying to create the pattern with Chera, just we don't think he's made his decision yet, but basically saying to him, well, have a look, you know, Andy Brayshaw's here, Sean Darcy's going to be here, all these other guys have signed on. You know, what do you reckon, mate?
Certainly doesn't hurt, does it?
It doesn't hurt you. No. Doesn't hurt
what
you.
Doesn't hurt is getting some wins and pushing for the eight, and if the Dockers can do that, if he hasn't decided between now and the end of the home and away season, you want to see that light at the end of the tunnel. I think any player, and obviously he's got strong ties to his family in Victoria. We know that Richmond and Carlton and whoever else would love to get him. So it's a huge decision on that front. But as we said, that's if you were to toss the coin, it could go either way, according to what we're hearing left, right and centre from people about Chera.
Well, he may not know yet.
I think that's the thing. I think that he's still making up his mind, which means it's genuinely 50-50. I think Peter Sumich went very strongly on air that he was going to sign for 2 years at $750,000. I'm assured that that hasn't happened yet, that it hasn't shifted. But we are seeing Fremantle roll these signatures out, so it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks, I reckon.
And we know that COVID, given what we're talking about with the Dockers, their game on Saturday has been moved forward 3 hours. They then catch a chartered flight back home, quarantine for a few days. It's affecting a lot of clubs this weekend.
Can I ask, what is the theory behind the 4 days of quarantining for Freo when they return?
I think it's that the border arrangements are scheduled to change on Wednesday.
Okay, so that's what it's about, yes. Our borders are going to be open to Victoria from Wednesday.
Well, there's going to be looser restrictions, I think. What those restrictions are, I don't know. I think Fremantle feels there is still a chance that they may get out of home isolation a little bit earlier than that. They have exemptions to train, so basically come home, stay at home, train, go home again.
We do know that the Eagles' Sydney game, which is set down for the SCG next week, almost certainly will be played in Victoria, most likely Marvel Stadium. So that's
Melbourne or Adelaide are the two cities that are being thrown up.
At this point, and that's a big tick for the Eagles. If they can get away from the SCG to play the Swans, that's a massive win for them. In fact, let's be honest, the COVID scenario has worked in West Coast favour this year on a couple of occasions, notably Richmond, in terms of getting them over here. And the Bulldogs, of course, have been in quarantine up at Joondalup for the past few days.
It may not work in their favour if a theory that was espoused last night comes to fruition. So I think it was Matthew Lloyd was saying Sydney should decide where they play this game. And actually, they should. They should. It's their home game. They should play it in Geelong. They've got they've won four of their last five at Geelong, and the Eagles don't like going there. So don't be surprised if there's a bit of a push. Well, it's been espoused, so let's see what Sydney does. But why wouldn't you play it at Geelong? Base yourself down at Geelong. It's a great city to be there. It's probably a bit more relaxed in terms of what you can do. And it's sort of like a home ground advantage for you.
I wonder if stadium contracts have something to do with this. There will be a certain amount of games will be required to play in certain places. And clearly, the venue with the most lobbying leverage, if you like, is going to be the MCG. That's their go-to ground. So I wonder if that becomes a factor. And I wonder whether that was a factor in GWS and Hawthorn being played at the MCG because, I mean, with GWS being on the verge of the eight...
Marvel Stadium would be far more preferable for them in the sense of...
Well, see, I don't agree. I think the Giants would want to play at the MCG.
But for the right here, right now, Duff, where do you think... If you were to play Hawthorn to take them out of their comfort zone, we're talking about this week, not September, but I think Marvel Stadium, if you've got to go to Victoria, that's where I think the Giants would...
Well, I like Quarters' theory. If I was the Giants and I was looking for the win was the top priority, I'd be going to Geelong.
So there's a difference between... If they were playing Richmond, they would not want to play them at the G. I can tell you that right now. But if they're playing Hawthorn at a stadium where they can get exposure, they can... MCG is where you play the grand final. So they don't get to play there very often. I think they'd be jumping at that opportunity because the opponent is Hawthorn and they're very gettable.
Fair enough.
But, look, I heard Stuart Fox this morning talking about the MCG. Now, I think we're all a bit confused about the game in Geelong last week with the crowd all being jammed into one or two grandstands. I was just scratching my head thinking, how does that work with COVID? But I heard Stuart Fox this morning. So what they're doing with the 25,000 capacity is they're going to close level four. They're going to have levels one, two, and three open, and he assures us they'll be spread around the ground. I'm still scratching my head
over
that.
You mean spread of people as opposed to spread of virus?
Spread of people around the ground due to COVID.
And you can understand the frustration in Geelong given their lack of COVID cases over the past 12 months. Look, there's confusion. The logic sometimes doesn't add up. You have to lay the health authorities with the best amount of responsibility, and they do exactly what they think is right, but there is some confusion created when it comes to crowds this weekend. I think the A-League Grand Final, for instance, has been... given the all clear to have a capacity crowd or thereabouts. So there's some interest.
What is it, 5,000 for the Wildcats Melbourne United at John Cain Arena?
Mm-hmm.
Big, rabid 5,000 at John Cain Arena. Look out, Wildcats.
For Hutchie to watch both his teams go at it.
We should get Josh, the basketball aficionado amongst us. What view do you take of Craig Hutchison's bid to buy the Wildcats?
It's interesting. It's quite... My first thought was you've gone from Bendat, this silent, ageing billionaire who's just given so much to basketball as a sport, which is so impacted by ownership on the league. If you get a bad league, we've seen in the past, Firepower, ABC Learning, you get a bad billionaire, a bad millionaire, teams fold pretty quickly. So to get Bendat there for so long, giving so much, not even being in the face of anything as far as the Wildcats, then you got a Hutchie who's all about the face, who's all about stepping in front of the camera. My first reaction was that's probably not going to sit that well with Wildcats fans, and Wildcats fans are always us versus them versus the East Coast, and Hutchie's sort of the personification of the East Coast of basketball. My first thought was it's kind of a bit silly having someone owning two teams.
Yeah, that's...
It probably won't sit very well.
With the NBL, you mean?
But aside from all that, you just want to make sure that he can sustain ownership, that it's not just a flash in the pan and, you know, SEN or not SEN, his... Sports industry, I forget the name
of it. Sports Entertainment Network.
Thank you very much. It's expanding very quickly. are we sure it's not in a lot of debt? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no, they're not in a lot of debt. I'm very confident they're well-backed. I'm very confident in Craig Hutchison. I think he's terrific. I think he'd be a great owner. I have a problem with him owning two teams.
No,
I don't see how that can work. I don't see if you're chasing the same player, how does that work? I don't think you should be allowed to own two teams in the same competition.
And off the back of that, sports ownership, I've always struggled to see how it's almost like owning a racehorse or a boat in my mind. Very rarely do you make money out of it, in my humble opinion, watching EPL clubs, etc., unless you're a, well, very rarely is there a profit-making venture involved.
They're all of sport mentality, though. They want to just keep growing and growing and growing exponentially. So that's what they're about. And as I said, they are well-backed. So money is not an issue, and good luck to him. But I'd just like to see him own the Wildcats, not Melbourne United as well.
It's interesting how we talk about and we blanch at the prospect that a person could own two teams in one competition. We have a body that owns two teams in one competition.
Mm. Yes. Is it a bit different, the West Australian Football
Club? It is. It's a public body, and it's a governing body as opposed to a business body. But it's still about generating funds, not for profit, but funds to fund the community in Western Australia. And, you know, it's interesting that I remember interviewing Peter Tanick, who was a great chairman of the West Australian Football Commission, but this is going back into the mid to late 1990s, and we're talking about as Fremantle was getting started up. And Peter Tanick, during the interview, repeatedly referred to West Coast as our Eagles and Fremantle as the Fremantle Dockers. Which I found...
Didn't go down too well in some quarters.
It certainly didn't go down with me.
No. Mm.
You know, I was thinking, I'm not sure that that's the way the chairman of the Football Commission should be speaking.
And I'm not sure we'll get back to that stage. I mean, the most recent memory of that ownership, private ownership, the late Geoffrey Edelson, the Sydney Swans. And we know, look, he brought Jared Healy and Greg Williams and, I mean, Bernard Tui. There were a few players he brought of high profile. I think they got to a prelim final.
Warwick Capper,
of course. He got all these big names and the Swanettes, not forgetting that, and Leon Edelson, and all the pink helicopter, etc. In the end, it didn't really cut the mustard long term.
Oh, but I think private ownership didn't, but I think Sydney's move from South Melbourne has proved to be a great move, because even though they had their periods where it didn't look too flash,
true.
I think Sydney's now a very embedded, important part of the AFL.
And I think when Sydney finally got their stuff together in the 1990s, they'd already been introduced to the game, because Edelson was all about, you know, fluff and flair and flash and all those sorts of things. And so they already and they played in front of some massive crowds. It was all about entertainment. You know, you had Warwick Capper standing on people's heads with his shorts stuffed most of the way up his clacker. Yeah. You know,
but they were great entertainment. They were almost in Perth. They used to be the late Sunday game. Now, it used to be great entertainment watching them on the small SCG, and it was, you're right, it was fantastic. At that period where Sydney needed a profile for AFL, the late Dr. Geoffrey Edelson provided it.
I was at Princess Park at the Big Scoreboard Inn one day watching a Hawthorn-Sydney game, and there was these two young blokes there commenting on Warwick Capper and his tight shorts, you know, so far up your arse, you could pull them out your mouth, all that sort of stuff. And this old bloke standing next to us with a roll your own just turns to these two blokes. He goes, "You should be watching the game, fellas, not his ass." Touche.
While we're on expansion clubs, Quarters, you've got some news coming out of Gold Coast and what they might do in trading.
Well, yeah, it's not fact yet, but we believe it will be. So they've put pick three on the trade table. They want to find a key forward who can stand alongside Ben King and give him some support down there. And just look, I'm not sure who they're going after, but I mean, certainly you would entertain that. But who is available? The players coming out of contract. Just a couple here: Wiedemann, Taylor Walker, Mason Cox, Jake Stringer. Would you go with Jake Stringer for number three, for pick three?
No.
Okay.
No, well, there's no one there. I mean, Taylor Walker's just about done.
There is, but we get Tom Lynch back, but that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. No, I'm trying to think of a key forward that has got five
that
or six
fits the bill.
Yeah, I don't see
you
any.
You needed someone in their mid-20s. I think what they want is experience.
Well, I tell you who you're giving up the number three draft pick for. You're giving it up for Oscar Allen.
Mm.
Which isn't happening either.
Or Aaron Norton.
So they're putting it on the table. Now, it may not come to fruition, but it's there.
Or
well, it will be.
Maybe as a forward ruck who is a very good forward, maybe Tim English.
Mm. Mm. And, of course, during the week, the so-called culture of the Suns has been put under the microscope. I mean, a bit, when I say unfair, the players had finished the game against Port Adelaide. They went to the Burley Pavilion for a few drinks, which it's not unacceptable. But when the results aren't going your way and the stories start coming out about Stuart Dew and the assistant coaches, and now they're referred to as not even the best AFL or Australian rules side.
Burley Heads regard themselves as the best team.
No, Southport, I think. Southport Sharks are the team.
They're a pretty strong team, Southport good Sharks.
I mean, guys like Matthew Primus, et cetera, have gone to help the Southport Sharks. All it says is that the Gold Coast Suns are in a big hole at the moment. We talked about this on Tuesday, and we still are no closer to finding out a way or a reason to get them out.
So is that St Kilda, I noticed this weekend, are talking about the return of Rowan Marshall being important for Max mm-hmm. King. So do you think Ben King... Ben King's had a pretty good season, really, mm-hmm. hasn't he? For a kid that age...
And given
that
what build, they've given the supply.
So I think he's been okay. Does another big forward help Ben King enough to turn them into a winning club?
Well, have a look at what's happened at Geelong with Cameron coming in, with Gary Rowan, and Tom Hawkins adapting his role as well. I'm not comparing them, I'm just saying it does help.
Geelong were in a grand final last year.
And they were a pretty good side.
But it does help when you get other support down there.
I'm not sure they can get that forward that you're talking about, Quarters. I mean, good luck to them. The number three pick is, as Duff said the other day, inside the first 20, there are generally no duds.
I think they're fishing. What they're saying is, our preference is for a key forward, but make us an offer, see what else is out there as well, and we'll have a think about it. So I think they've got a pretty youthful list, so I think it's a good move to see what's out there.
That's the other thing they're saying. We don't think another talented kid is going to help us. Basically, we need to be far enough up the ladder to be retaining Lucosius, Rankin, Ben King, Matt Rowell, Noah Anderson, these types of players, and therefore we need some results a bit quicker than another top-end draft.
And I think I truly think they need some more help off the field in the surrounding Stuart Dew.
And they've had a fair bit of help off the field, as we know, but you're talking about football department, soft cap.
It's been itinerant.
Well, they've got Mark Evans there. There's experienced football people involved, but you're right. There's just a void there, and maybe it does come down to getting the, as I say in American sport, the front office right.
Mm. So I'm going to put one to you, okay, on Gold Coast. We're talking about like different mechanisms you could put in place for Gold Coast. I'm not sure that Ross Lyon's going to get a coaching job. Okay, if he does, probably the fit is Carlton, a team that attacks but doesn't defend.
Yep.
That's probably perfect for Ross. But what if the AFL was to say to Ross, we're going to pay you a 12-month consultancy. We want you to go to Gold Coast and straighten a few of the kinks out. Basically, you know, Ross was big on accountability. You know, it was kind of like my way or the highway sort of thing. He'd go there and he'd look at a few things and he'd go, actually, you know what, that's just not going to cut it. Or this isn't going to cut it. Have it as a consultant as opposed to the boss.
Love the idea. He's got history on the Gold Coast too. Well, certainly with the Brisbane Bears, so in Queensland.
Yeah, I mean, would that be a job that Ross Lyon could do, say, pay him $200,000 or $300,000, go there and let's see if we can get this right. Because right now it still looks wrong, doesn't it?
Well, and you're saying, in essence, be the right-hand man or maybe oversee Stuart Dew or a more broader role?
No, I'm saying as a consultant to oversee the club. Like, look at the...
Malcolm Blight had something of that ilk, didn't he?
But Blighty's not really hands-on, is he? You know, like, if Ross went, if you convinced Ross to do it, Ross could go and go, he'd look at something and he'd go, that's not going to work. That's just his nature, isn't it? He's very...
I've got a feeling if Ross went there, there wouldn't be one or two. There would be a lot of change.
A myriad of issues which would come up. But
I don't mind the idea, by the way. I like that idea. And I tell you who's firming for Collingwood now after his appearance on the front bar last night.
Brad Scott. It's amazing how these things bob up. You know the other great phenomenon? Have you ever noticed, you know how we often go to the finals in Melbourne and mm-hmm. so you'll be in the media box at the MCG. Have you ever noticed that the assistants that are in line for jobs start turning up at those games and start mingling with the media very freely? That's like, it's great PR,
particularly the Melbourne media that can't hurt you.
That was magnificent PR for Brad Scott last night. And I, you know what, forget that. I want to see him coach again because I think he did a really good job at North. We know he said to North, we need to regenerate now. We're not going to be able to trade in and challenge. And they said, no, we think you can. And, of course, the two were at an impasse and he left. And then they fell off the cliff. So that was no real – I think he got North into a pretty good position at an under-resourced club. And I would love to see him go to a club like Collingwood to see what he was capable of.
And I'd love to see a coach like Scott, like Lepich, like Foss. You know, they've had one go at it. And I think they're regarded as by and large, as being dirty laundry. I'd love to see – you always learn from those types of experiences that those three, for instance, went through. I'd have no issue seeing one of those types of coaches come back into the mix. I'm almost certain they'd be better for the run, so to speak.
All right, let's move on. Let's see if we can tip a winner, guys. So we've got round 15, is it? Round 15?
It's round 15. It's very tough this weekend. Extremely
tough.
It's tough
every week.
It's not that hard sometimes.
I'm going to put the moz on myself here, but I found this week a couple of games, but a little bit easier than last.
So Brisbane versus Geelong tonight. Brisbane with Tab Toucher, $1.68. Geelong at $2.18. It's at the Gabatoir. But, of course, Geelong has played pretty good football there in recent times. They'll be very familiar with the ground after last year. What are we thinking?
57, 49, 24, 28, 64 winning margins Brisbane at the Gabba this year. They've been very good there. We know Geelong travels well to the Gabba. We know, obviously, they've got experience there from last year. And also, in Chris Fagan's own words, they have bullied us in recent times. And we saw from round two. And you can talk it down as much as you like, but I reckon there's still a bit of aggro associated with this game because a lot happened in round two. We know the free kick that should have been paid at the end of the game that cost Brisbane that may have cost Brisbane that game. We know it was O'Connor onto Neil, wasn't it? It was a great tag, which will happen again, absolute certainty. And there's a fair bit of antagonism in that game. So bring it on, I say. I'm going to pick Brisbane purely because it's at the Gabba, and I think there's a very strong form line there. Nothing, both teams are going along okay, and I just got Gabba's got me over the line.
Yeah, the Cats have won their past six, which in modern footy and in this year,
that's a big run.
That's a massive run, and obviously they were a kick away from not winning against the Bulldogs. Their record against the Lions very good. Mitch Duncan's a massive out. That's huge for them going into this one. I'm with Quarters. I'm sticking with Brisbane. I think at the Gabba, you always go back to what you know, and you just know they're going to, apart from that round one game, they're going to turn up. And I think because Geelong have been up for a long time, and bear in mind they have other form team of the competition going for the Lions tonight, should be a cracking Thursday night game.
It'll be a great game. Brisbane are reasonably well set up to cope with Cameron and Hawkins.
Yep.
Obviously, Harris Andrews takes one.
Yep.
And they'll have a spare defender to take the other one.
Marcus Adams is in the mix down back. Yeah, but that's the beauty of having the two-prong, you know, Cameron and Hawkins. If one doesn't get you, the other invariably does.
Or Rowan.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm going to tip Brisbane. Same with you guys. I think it's just because of where it's at. Is their smallest winning margin? Obviously, they lost in round one to Sydney. The smallest winning margin is 24.
Yep.
That was Fremantle.
Mm.
And they had that game, I think, in their back pocket early on.
They were in third gear for most of the last quarter. But it's interesting that Fremantle have been closer to them than anyone else.
And you know what? Thankfully, we've got Thursday night footy back too. Don't you love it?
Yeah, I'm not sure about Thursday night
footy. I love it.
Let me tell you, I think in a couple of weeks we'll see potentially the AFL's looking in my humble opinion. There's some talk about the Eagles hosting North Melbourne on a Thursday night here around 17 on a Thursday night. So just keep an eye out for that possibility. Mm-hmm. But I think Quarters, most fans are in your corner with regards to Thursday night footy. Outside of that, this the historical Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but there's a there's a real love for what's happened with Thursday night footy this year, and particularly being able to cherry pick some of these matches now ahead and not having, say, Carlton or St Kilda on those big runs we had a few years ago.
All right, Friday night, Richmond versus St Kilda, $1.18 the Tigers with Tab Touch, $4.80 the Saints. Okay, small hands, make a case for the Saints.
Seb Ross and Membry are back. Marshall's back, very important in Marshall. But beyond that, I can make no case for St Kilda. Lost by 86 points the corresponding game earlier in the season. I think Richmond will, it will be a massacre.
A massacre?
Yes.
A bit like earlier
this
season.
That's worse than a massacre.
Arlo Guthrie.
I think it will be ugly.
Well, they got hold of them, didn't they, earlier this season? I mean, it was the best part of 100 points.
So it's round 15. What does that mean? What are we getting towards?
Big boy pants.
Big boy pants time. We're getting towards September. You look at Richmond will be out to make a couple of statements.
They can't afford to have any more stuff ups.
No, they've got no wriggle room. They're in a phone box. And if they are to, look, as you say, Cordis, you're 100% right. If there's one team you don't want to face who is 6th, 7th or 8th with one chance in the finals, it's Richmond. But it doesn't leave them any room for error. They'll win tomorrow night against the Saints. The margin could be anything if they put their mind to it.
And really interesting sidelight to it. Debutante, Sampson Ryan, 206-centimetre ruckman for Richmond, so he'll go alongside Mabie Achol, and so look forward to seeing him and what he can offer.
And do you think that's in preparation for knowing that Ryder and Rowan Marshall will go up against them?
Absolutely.
Be fascinating to see how the Saints perform with both Marshall and Ryder there.
Better.
They were a real barometer for them last year. It's almost like their key point of difference in the competition. So it'll be interesting to see. We often talk about the relevance and the impact of ruckman. It's going to be interesting to see what sort of impact they have. Skeet, you're on the Tigers. I am on the Tigers for sure. Saturday, the game has been brought forward at Marvel Stadium. Collingwood versus Fremantle, $1.68, the Pies with Tab Touch, $2.20, the Dockers. Which way are you going, boys?
Firstly, does Nat Fyfe play?
Look, I'm thinking he probably does. I reckon the two key selection issues here that probably influence how you tip are, does Fyfe play for Fremantle and does Taylor Adams play for Collingwood?
And quickly, if Fyfe is on the plane today going to Melbourne, does that almost tick it off? I mean, what?
No, not necessarily.
You don't think so?
Not, but the point, I'll raise a point. So Fyfe, this is not settled, Duff, for two, three weeks. Is that right, his shoulder?
No, they're saying we'll leave it up to Nathan.
Yeah, they'll leave it up to Nathan. What my point is, it's either, is it at the point now where is another week going to help? Or if it's come to this point, does he just have surgery?
Yeah, I would be worried if he doesn't get up for this week and they're thinking he needs another week for it to settle down, I'd be worried about whether it's going to be right enough. Let's not forget that he played with a similar injury in 2019 and just ploughed on week after week after week after week, won himself his second Brownlow medal. So to me, he's had 3 weeks. To me, if it hasn't settled in that three-week period, I'd be thinking that he may be more inclined to go to surgery.
Yeah, I think he will play if it's up to Fyfe. We know he's a tough cookie. I think he'll play, and just fingers crossed that it's okay. Otherwise, we may not see him for a while.
Don't get the Pies at a bat. Look, they've won their past two, Collingwood, to be fair. First game without Nathan Buckley as coach, so Robert Harvey gets the reins. But Darcy Moore's absence.
Huge.
Jordan De Goey out.
Huge.
Match winner and a match saver. There's a real window for the Dockers here, but my confidence in them on the road is still not
same.
At an acceptable level.
Collingwood straighter and quicker. Nathan Buckley gone. Robert Harvey in. Does that influence the result? I'm going to pick Collingwood here. I'm picking Collingwood because of the travel factor for Freo. Little bit disruptive. Not riding Freo off by any means. I just got. It's more of a gut feel, this tip, I think, with Collingwood.
Skeet?
Yeah, Magpies for me, and what they've beaten the Adelaide Crows on the road this year, Fremantle.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only win away from home off the top of your head they've had this year?
Yes.
So, and Adelaide, their form early was good, but they faded. Oh, yeah, just if you're going with percentages, you think Collingwood, but this game is there for the Dockers to be had.
I reckon, you know what? I reckon you've made the case why Fremantle should win this game, both of you.
Mm.
And I'm tipping Fremantle. Fremantle should win this game. The outs are big for Collingwood. Fremantle still has a few out, but they're getting significant ins back in. Logue should come back. Tabanagh should come back. We think Fyfe, probably 60-40, maybe even 70-30 plays. Maybe they know he's playing and they're just trying to create a bit of doubt in Collingwood's mind about whether he's playing or not. To me, when I look at Collingwood's team and I look at Collingwood's form line and I also look at Fremantle the last time at this ground, Fremantle should have beaten Essendon. Last time at this ground. Essendon right now is a better team than Collingwood.
But that's a problem, Duff, with the Dockers. They should have, could have, on a few of those away trips, but at the moment, they're not. Now, I commend you for tipping Fremantle. But
I'm going to pick you up on that. I think the only one they should have won is Essendon. Every other game, I think they've been too far back. They should have beaten Essendon. And I think Essendon is better than Collingwood. And I particularly think Essendon is better than Collingwood when it's a Collingwood without Darcy Moore. And without Jordan De Goey and with Taylor Adams probably in doubt. Maybe I'll regret this, but what I would say is Fremantle should be winning this game. With what's on the line for Fremantle and what's on the line for Collingwood, let's face it, it's not much.
And the personnel that Fremantle has in, as you say, with Pierce coming back, Logue in the mix, Tabanagh gives them something in attack. No, I won't switch, but you do make a good case.
I think they should be winning this game.
Mm. I like the Grundy-Darcy matchup too, given particularly on the heels of Darcy's re-signing. I'm looking forward to that very much with this game.
This is when, like, we think Fremantle's at that point where they've got most of the building blocks in place and it's time to make a couple of statements. This is a statement game. On the road, you need to win to stay in contention for finals. This is one where you want to be looking at your player group in the eyes before they go out and basically saying, you know what's on the line here. These, and I know that Fremantle hate crosstown comparisons, but these are the games over the course of their history that West Coast has a habit of standing up and winning.
And just, you talked about correcting me, Collingwood beat the league leaders last start. They've beaten Adelaide in Adelaide, which is, I just can't get my head around that first half against the Gold Coast Suns and what, I know they went on and won the game comfortably, but they have to improve markedly, I think, on that first half and for the whole game to win on the weekend.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would also argue you don't have to go too far back to find games where Collingwood had to improve markedly.
Yeah, but recent form is not bad. So anyway, we beg to differ, but we'll see what happens.
All right, so 2-1 against me there. Saturday, North Melbourne versus Gold Coast.
Oh, dear.
North Melbourne are $1.64 with Tab Touch. Gold Coast are at $2.25. I'm liking North here, I have to say.
Same. I did struggle with this, but Gold Coast offer me nothing, really, at the moment. North have been good down in Hobart at Blundstone. They're hard to beat there. I'm picking them on that. They are really hard to beat there.
They are.
Way from the Gold Coast.
It's a long way from the Gold Coast.
They might actually see a couple of penguins as they run out in the
ground. Think they're in a scene from Game of Thrones, the Gold Coast Suns boys, when they run out down at Blundstone.
We're all jumping on a team that's won 1.5 games.
We're not jumping on.
Well, we're tipping them.
We've jumped off the other one. More of the point.
61% is their percentage. We're tipping North Melbourne, but really, they shouldn't be. I think they've shortened up in the market for Tab Touch as well, but they are an average side. But you're right, playing with heart, which we don't see from the other mob Gold Coast, which is a pity because we want something from the Suns.
Last week we saw a 23-point loss to Brisbane North. It was a very good effort. I think Gold Coast, 16 points scored across three quarters against the Power.
Lamentable.
Significant out this one too. David Swallow concussed last week, so he doesn't play. David Swallow is the sort of person you would want on the deck if you're Gold Coast in this game. Someone who'll go to war for you.
Yep.
So it'll be Tuke Miller going up over the trenches going, follow me, boys.
Yeah. And then he's been good, Tuke Miller.
Looking around and going, no one came.
For the Kangaroos, you can see they're playing for David Noble. At the moment, you can't say the same about the Gold Coast.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
We're unanimous.
Yep.
Or anonymous.
Either or. They lose.
Later on Saturday, Port Adelaide versus Sydney in Adelaide. Sydney on a fly-in, fly-out mission. Port are $1.29 with Tab Touch. Sydney are $3.60. What do you think, boys?
Port, a really interesting Port. At home, I'm picking Port. I think you tend to always pick them at home. But there's just cracks in the armoury. In terms of challenging for the four and challenging for the flag, I think they're a fair way off right now. But in terms of their ability to withstand Sydney in Adelaide, I don't think it should be too difficult. We'll put it this way. If there are any chance, they have to win this game.
Yeah, but bear in mind, Sydney's still in the eight, so we have to give them that respect and what they have done this season. Yeah, I'm wavering on Port, but they have to start getting back on track. To make the top four, they have to win these types of games. For me, Port Adelaide, if they can get some numbers back through the midfield, they'll get back to somewhere near their best. Yeah, Sydney's had a bit on its plate. Their form has definitely tapered.
Yeah, I'm going with Port, mainly because of where it's played. If it was in Sydney, I'd probably go the other way on this one. But I think Port Adelaide needs three or four players back, don't they? They need Butters, they need Dersma.
Desperately need
Cleary.
Yes.
So until they get them, we don't think they're top six. We think they'll probably get into the finals, but we don't think
so they're still top six. Fair way off. Butters still a fair way off.
Butters had a setback.
Yeah,
I think Dersma's not too far away.
And Cleary?
And Cleary, I think, is a little bit closer than all of them. So he may even be in the mix.
Cleary, one of those players who you tend to not really notice, but he's so important to them.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right. We're unanimous on that one as well. Saturday evening, Essendon versus Melbourne. Geez, I tell you what, Melbourne are short on this one.
They are.
Given their recent form and Essendon's recent form.
$4 Essendon?
$4 with Tab Touch. Melbourne are $1.25.
Sneaky chance, aren't they?
They are. I'm picking Melbourne on form, you have to. I like Essendon. Struggled to put away Hawthorn in Tassie. I suppose down in Tassie, first game there, you give them a bit of a tick for that anyway. The package obviously found forms, which means you'll lose form this week.
Yeah, don't get started on the package again.
Geez, hype around Jake Stringer this week. One good performance against no defence, and everyone's jumping on.
And I think we need a Jake Stringer preservation society with you.
Like, yeah, it's just been over the top, the hype for Jake Stringer.
But there's
this
a lot of hit and miss players in the AFL, isn't there?
Yeah, there are.
Jordan Ngoi is the same.
If he can do that three or four times a year,
I'd have Jordan Ngoi ahead of Jake Stringer in my team.
Would you? Has Jordan Ngoi ever kicked 56 goals in a season?
I reckon there's more upside for Jordan Ngoi if you get it right.
Yeah, well, we've been waiting a while. Like, he's a match winner. We saw him here at Optus Stadium turn it on against the Cats, and we've seen it spasmodically, but a bit like Jake Stringer, you're reluctant to, if you're a club, to say, no, we're going to let you go, because you know that it'll come back to bite you at some stage. He's just one of those X-factor players that you love to have in your
list. So the question is, has Melbourne got its big boys' pants on?
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we? Because really, their last couple of performances demand a response. So let's see what response we get. Melbourne.
They get some grunt, don't they, with Jack Viney coming back into the side. He's a barometer, along with Clayton Oliver.
Pretty hard to pick holes in Melbourne at the moment.
They're midfield.
You're allowed to have a little bit of a... And their sort of slump has been still winning games of footy, which in the past we haven't seen. So ticks all over for Melbourne at the moment.
So you're allowed to have that 2 or 3 week window in the middle of the season where you've taken your summer pants off and you're fossicking around in the drawer for the big boy pants.
Where are those big boy pants? And I can't find them.
And you're caught with no pants on, which is where Melbourne have been in the last couple
of
weeks.
Still managed to sort of get the towels been there. They've still managed to get away with it, if you know what I mean.
I think the Demons at the MCG, I'm with you. I think they're probably going to have a little bit too much grunt through the midfield. Mm. And look, on exposed form, Essendon's going to be, if they come and play with the bravado and...
Which
and
they will.
They will.
But that's how Rutten's got them playing, which is why it makes this game so fascinating.
But Lever, May, defensively, Melbourne probably just well set up enough behind the ball, I think, to get across the line.
Yeah, Melbourne for me as well. All right, on to Sunday. GWS versus Hawthorn's been switched from Giants Stadium to the MCG. GWS, $1.63 with Tab Touch. Hawthorn, $2.27 with Tab Touch. Come on, Quarters, make a case for your boys.
Well, the Hawks have already won.
How?
The Atlanta Hawks won the NBA game, one of their series against Milwaukee. So you're up and about already.
Compare Atlanta Hawks to the real Hawks, Skeet. Come on. Look, I can make a case for Hawthorn. I think they were thereabouts against Essendon last week. But I look at that Hawthorn back line, and it just looks so bereft without Sicily. It has all year. They're trying their best, but I think they're very gettable, that back half at Hawthorn. And a midfield that's loaded with talent but does get beaten in the clearances. So I think Hawthorn's got a fair way to go. We know where they're at. I'm not prepared to back Hawthorn against the Giants when they're in the window to make the eight. It was a good win last week, led by Toby Green. He is their talisman. I'm picking the Giants.
I go back to a game in Canberra. Was it last year? When it snowed.
Clarko was running around with his shirt off.
And the Hawks absolutely tailed up the Giants. Talk about your big boy pants.
But did they want to win? Did they want to win this game?
That's only key. You would know, being someone in the inner sanctum at Hawthorn.
I'm just not sure. Wanting to win and being desperate to win are different things. Yeah, I'm just not sure that there's the desperation there at the moment.
Players want to win.
Yeah, they want to win, but how you...
Clubs don't necessarily always want to win.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
I mean, when we have the tanking debate, we know that players go out there and try to win, because no player wants to go out there and not try. It's a damning thing. But the club will sometimes, they'll play kids a bit younger. They'll send more players off for surgery.
Systems are managed.
Yeah. And you wonder whether the Hawks are in that mode at the moment. What will they do at the end of the season? Will they be trading or drafting?
Oh, drafting. And you don't wonder. You know that that's what they're doing.
Any big names likely to leave the club?
Well, everyone's talking Tom Mitchell up. He's saying no. I'm saying don't get rid of him, because unless it's the deal of the century, which it won't be, Tom Mitchell's 28, and we need experience in the midfield. The one thing Hawthorn needs is pace around the midfield. Right?
So that's the players you put around Tom, as opposed to replacing
him. Your priority should be recruiting in probably another key four wouldn't hurt, but I'm talking about quick midfielders. That's what Hawthorn needs at the moment. And you keep what you've got there, which is some really good players, Jay Gramira, Tom Mitchell, Warple. We know that Luke Bruce can run through there. We know Liam Shields is a good player.
All we know is Clarko.
The foundation's there. But, you know, the experience is there. You need an injection of youth and pace.
But you talk about trading. The draft will take care of itself. They'll go for what they have to. But Clarko's got a good reputation and a history of getting.
No, they're playing past that.
No, I'm saying he's if you are looking to get that player in, Clarko's one bloke that players think, you know what, I'd love to be coached by him.
But that was
point.
When they were a chance of challenging and contending. They're not now.
They're not a destination club.
So they need to get the youth in to become a destination club again. So would you go to Hawthorn if you're a Shai Bolton, for example? You wouldn't.
Well, dollars talk the world in sport, but you're right. Ideally, you want to be somewhere that's contending. That's where so many players like Adam Cherry,
etc. So kids at the moment at Hawthorn. That's the key.
All right, one word tip.
The Giants.
Giants.
Okay. Sunday, Optus Stadium, 1:20 p.m. West Coast versus Bulldogs. Two of the great contenders this year. $1.79 with Tab Touch West Coast. $2.08 Bulldogs. Can the Bulldogs come here and upset the Eagles at Fortress Optus?
They can, but they won't.
Why?
I'm picking, well, if Norton's probably the key. If he plays, I give them more of a chance. I'm just not sure whether he's going to play or not. I think it's a 50-50. A Shearer big in for West Coast. They just play Optus so well, the Eagles, and it's a home game. When did you last pick against the Eagles at home?
No, I just don't pick against the Eagles.
Well, the Derby, I think a couple of experts around town.
So you know I'm a fan of the Dogs. I love them, and I still think they're very much a contender, but this is a tough game to win. They've been here for 6 days.
And in quarantine situations, they trained yesterday outside Northern Oval at Optus Stadium. Aaron Norton, by the way, did train, so I reckon he'll pass his fitness test tomorrow and play. Forecast is for a bit of rain. Now, if that's the case, they've got that sort of midfield grunt to test the Eagles, but the big four are set to come back. Shuey, McGovern, Kelly, and one other, I believe. Now, I'm not sure if Witherden's right to go, but there's certainly a core group of experienced heads where you think they're just, and don't get me wrong, they're not Melbourne top of the table flying, but they are just starting to build really nicely.
Josh Kennedy, 250th game.
Been stuck under the radar, hasn't it?
Been a great player.
Oh, been a great 100%. Player. I tried to retire him 2 years ago.
Superstar. Does he go around next year?
I reckon based on what we're seeing, probably. Like if we're talking David Mundy going around, I think Josh Kennedy goes around. The only worry for them would be, like if West Coast are looking at it and they're going, it's time for Oscar Allen to play as a power forward. And we still see West Coast having this selection juggle. They don't really want Allen to play as a ruck forward, and you can understand why. But if he doesn't play there, where does he play? And that's the problem for them. So at some point, they're going to have to make a call, and they'll know more about Josh's body than we do. And if his body's going okay, I reckon maybe. But if there's a little dent in there that we're not aware of, maybe
probably
not.
Leave it up to Josh, I think. Josh will make that decision.
He's done enough, hasn't
with
he?
With the Dogs, we all love their midfield. We like the way they go about it. If you asked me to pick one player in the comp, you could start building a team around, I'd say Bontempelli. I love him. McRae's had a good year again. Liberatore, very important to them. I just reckon, without Treloar, a little bit of speed, and with Dunkley's been out long term, they're just they're diluted a little bit in that midfield.
And Bailey Smith, who is their speed, not playing as well as he has in his first couple of seasons. That's the other thing.
So they're just a little bit more vulnerable than they normally would be in a midfield that has a lot of depth. So, I mean, for all those reasons, but most importantly, you don't pick against the Eagles at all.
They find a way at home.
So you're on West Coast,
I think you're obligated.
I am on West Coast.
To tip the West Coast Eagles.
Okay, Sunday. Carlton at $1.53 versus Adelaide, $2.50. Now, this is going to test you blokes.
Well, I'll tell you now, I get reminded quite regularly living in a household of females to put the toilet seat down. And when I forget, I get admonished and I get told off and I do it again. I've promised myself after round five I wouldn't tip Carlton again. You know what I'm doing? And we all are, from what I've seen in the paper, the West today. Well, we've just gave them the greatest whack of all time on Tuesday. I think we're all tipping Carlton.
Well, I'm not only going to put the toilet seat down, I'm putting one of those fluffy covers on it. I'm on the Blues.
As my wife said, just occasionally aim straight. So I try, but sometimes it doesn't work
out. I said on Tuesday I'll never pick Carlton again. Well, I'm picking them.
Okay.
3 days later.
I'm picking Carlton too. Let's not waste too much time on this because we'll be back on Tuesday explaining why we did and why we're never going to pick them again.
Now, let's just say that if they do manage to lose this game, then it's pile on the Teague train.
It is. He's in all sorts of trouble if they lose this
game. This is a massive game for them. And as I've
a massive game for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I texted Duff early in the season when I tipped Carlton against somebody.
At the five-minute mark of the first quarter.
I thought, as you probably would have done to me against the Eagles when you knew,
I knew 10 minutes in. I just looked at him and I went, nah, they're not winning this. No. And knew I'd made a mistake. All right, let's move on to the Biggie Juice Juicy Topic of the Week, brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
And Barry White. It's all good, baby.
It was all a dream. Juicy quarters just to topic of the week. Change it up occasionally once in a while. Barry White, maybe just something different,
mate. New kid on the block. Just
yeah, you're right. That's true. to the front of the bus.
Back up the truck.
Don't speak up in team meetings yet, Skeet.
Thanks, Dad.
All right, Skeet, I think you've got one for us.
Well, a bit of talk this week about specifically Mark Murphy on 295 games at Carlton. We mentioned the Blues. He's only played 10 games this year. And let's be honest, he's been a great servant of the Carlton Football Club. It begs the overall question, A, should someone like Mark Murphy be given the opportunity if Carlton aren't going to make the eight, which we think is a fait accompli, to get to that magical 300-game milestone? And also, expansion of that question, if you look around the league, there are probably at least half a dozen players who you think are going to struggle because of their health to get back into the side. Stephen Hill, for instance, at Fremantle, on 218 games, but only played 28 matches since 2018. Does he get a farewell game if the Dockers aren't in finals contention? What are your thoughts on the romance and sentimental yes. aspects of footy?
I reckon if they ever got Stephen Hill fit and through two games of the waffle, I reckon he's in the team anyway.
Mm. He is, but if they're out of finals contention and he's almost up to the mark, do you give him a send-off game? I'd say yes.
He's got to be fit.
Yeah,
of course.
But if it's a farewell game,
he's still got to be fit. Yeah.
So I'd say the same with Murphy. I would if they're out of contention. Yeah, let's true. Just say it. So I'd like to see him get to 300. Should he have played this year? No, because it's gone past him. But he probably didn't know that when he made the decision at the end of the last year. Neither did Carlton. It's just gone past him. So it's not necessarily, in hindsight, it's probably the wrong decision.
Did Murphy think when he went on?
Silly chance.
We're a silly chance of playing. I think they probably thought they were better than the silly chance.
And you know what? And you can't blame him because he has been a great servant and probably deserved a final year of playing finals. And it's disappointing that Carlton haven't been able to produce that for him.
So 295 games, five players have played more games for Carlton than Mark Murphy. The bloke who is above him on the pecking order, Stephen Silvani, played 312.
Big John.
Stephen Silvani played in 26 finals.
How many Mark Murphy?
Mark Murphy, six for two wins.
Yeah.
That's why, look, I'm sure he would have had a chance previously to go to another club. That's why I have a strong feeling that they will get him to that milestone.
Yeah.
And look, you'd understand players wanting to go that extra year. I mean, Stephen Hill, let's be honest, his body a fair while ago suggested it's all over. But the Dockers, to be fair to them, they've given him every possible chance. Oh, I can't see him playing on next year as an example. I mean, David Mundy still is a question yeah. that has to be answered.
The other one's Sean Burgoyne.
Yep, true.
That's interesting too. On the Carlton, who are the 300? John Nicholls, Bruce Dool.
Well, Bruce Dool, clearly. John Nicholls, Soss.
Yes.
And there's two others.
Did his dad get 300?
Don't know about that. I'll do a quick check while we're rushing through.
It's an interesting one. Chiefs have been a good club.
David Mundy and Josh Kennedy are playing farewell games every week.
Yeah.
And
both have had fair seasons.
And in the words of Gloria Gaynor, they never can say goodbye. No, they keep on just backing up with great performances.
Underrated song, that, Duff.
It was a great song.
Mm.
Yep.
And I agree. About midnight on a Saturday.
So we're all here. So are we in agreement?
You know, we did miss out. Craig Bradley, 375.
Just quietly.
Played a few.
Fairly decent. Just on the quiet. Craig Bradles.
So who are the ones ahead of Mark Murphy then? Dool, clearly.
Dool.
Bradley, clearly.
Yeah, just bear with me. You know, I'm not great on my phone.
John Nicholls, probably. And Stephen Silvani, probably.
Who's played 300 games for Carlton? Here we go. Either way, I think we agree that he deserves to be in that echelon. Hang on. So Murphy, 295. Where have we got here? We've got Eddie Betts, 210, 195. Hang on a sec. Up the very top, Bruce Dool, 356. Kate Simpson, 342.
Oh, yeah, Kate Simpson.
John Nichols, as you said, 328. And Stephen Silvani, 312. So currently he is 1, 2, 3, 6th in line to the throne, which he won't get to. But that's a great body of work from all those players that have got to 300.
Yeah, and I think farewell games are a good thing as long as they don't interfere in your overall objectives. So, absolutely, if Fremantle can get Stephen Hill fit and there's nothing on the line at their last home game, Stephen Hill gets a run. Mark Murphy should absolutely get a run. Mark Murphy's not that far out of their best 22. You'd expect Mark Murphy to play a couple of games between on merit between now and the end of the season.
They've tried to change his role a bit, haven't they? Or certainly Teague has. And whether it's been counterproductive to what he's best at, they're just trying to nurse him.
Isn't it interesting, like, and Adelaide did this with Bryce Gibbs, didn't they? They changed his role, couldn't get a kick, got dropped out of the best team. They brought him back for a farewell game, and because it was a farewell game, he got to play the role he was suited to play. He was nearly best on ground.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And you start to ask the question, well, why doesn't he just play there every week?
Yeah.
You know, it is the AFL, it is an elite sporting competition. You shouldn't be nursing too many kids into a position at the expense of a player who's still better at that position than the kid is.
Mm. Agree.
All right, let's move on to everybody's favourite segment.
Mail. Hello.
You control the mail. You control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Hey, guys. Great to be back. Fantastic emails in the break between Tuesday and Thursday. Very quick, we also have a rapid fire.
Oh, nice.
At the very, very end from our man in the Cayman Islands. And it's actually less silly and more constructive, but yes and no answers. We'll get to that at the end. But right now, let's head to Canberra. And this is a special requested sound effect he asked.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker,
JobKeeper. So he asked for a Mr. Speaker.
I think we need a bit of Paul Keating.
No, we need a bit of Barnaby just to get us through.
A bit of Barnaby or a bit of Paul Keating. I'll do you slowly.
I'll do you slowly. That would be a good one. Stephen from Canberra. Since we've passed the mid-season bye, I was wondering what your thoughts were on the man on the mark rule change and if it was still effective. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's still effective. I think it's been a good change. The game's a little bit quicker. Tick for me.
Didn't like it initially when it came in, and I can still see players under certain circumstances standing there watching for until, of course, they get the play on call from the umpire, and it just looks a bit farcical at times. But I think in terms of what it's designed to do, it probably gets a result for the league.
Yeah, it puts the ball in motion more. I like it. The only time I don't really like it is inside 50 when a bloke's having a shot. I think you should be able to man the mark in that scenario. But I do like it between the arcs and coming out of D50. I think that's great. You know, the other change I would like to see inside attacking 50, you cannot point to the goals and say I'm having a shot unless you've taken the ball inside 50. And once you've pointed to the goals and taken a shot, that is your 30-second inside 50 for that ball movement. The ball has to exit and come back in before you get another 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of someone milking 25 seconds off the clock and then passing to another guy.
We can do the same.
And he gets another 30 seconds.
Yeah, fair call.
You can get rid of 2 minutes in the last 3 minutes to really just ice the game.
I'll add another one too with the man on the mark. I'm just totally over this retaining the ball just for as long as you can. So your defenders can get back. Do what they do in the NRL. If there's an interference with a play of the ball, it's another set of six. So I just think there should be harsh penalties for just curbing that player's ability to take the footy and move it on.
50-metre penalties are, like, you know what? I know we're going back in time, but remember the old 15-metre penalties?
Yes.
Probably not. But for the really minor infringements, gee, it's 50 metres is a massive whack.
Or the umpire should just hand them. Give me the football and the umpire hands it back to them immediately. I don't like it. It's ugly.
Thank you, Stephen. Also wanted to say, Duff, when are you going to go on the Purple Rain podcast? I love Duck and Oz, but their meltdowns after serious losses for Freo has me craving some level analysis. You think that is sort of cameo? Good cross-promotion, potentially.
They're great, those blokes. They sit up the back of the press box. They're real characters. They're very engaging. I don't mind their podcast. I usually listen to a replay as opposed to live because while it's live, I'm doing other things, which is why I'm never on the podcast. Plus, I might be in the fetal position sucking my thumb after a few Fremantle losses as well. I have to gather myself to file my copy for the West Australian.
I love on social media, it's Dockers supporters who give me the most amusement with their passion, their despair, their excitement, and they just get more involved, I feel.
Which is why we want to see him win a flag.
It'd be fantastic. Moving from Canberra now, thank you very much for the email, Stephen. Greg from Willow, with all the talk of the AFL team in Tasmania continuing and the good crowds attended on the weekend and games prior, I'm wondering whether AFL will monitor or take any notice of how the Tasmanian NBL expansion side, the Jack Jumpers, fares next season and the team, the terms of membership and attendance, or is it completely irrelevant?
Is Hutchie owning that team as well or not?
Don't start me on the Jack Jumpers. What's a Jack Jumper?
It's an ant.
Okay.
And but mind you, some people would say, what are the Dockers?
Hang on, with the crowds. So it was a great crowd last week, Hawthorn Essendon. What do you reckon it's going to be, North Gold Coast?
Yeah, no, not big.
5,000? Seriously?
Oh, it's going to be a struggle.
Let me just go to Tasmania. Everyone knows their great history. Will they have the same issues, though, that the Gold Coast have had, GWS have had, with regards to player retention? Is that an issue that has to be taken into account?
I think less so. I think we are a bit harsh on Tasmania. I'm a big Tasmania fan. I think it's got the great potential, and I don't think retention is as big an issue as other people.
You're a big Ballarat fan, mate. You're no measuring stick when it comes to a place's weather.
So you're telling me you'd rather, if you're a young footballer, you think Tassie ahead of, say, Queensland or New South Wales, the other expansion states?
Tassie's not a bad city.
I'm not saying it's not a bad city, but I'm saying the retention rate has to be an issue. If it's an issue for the Gold Coast and for, say, GWS, then surely it becomes
I think it's not as big a retention problem as you think.
You know what I reckon? I don't think it's the city. I think the venue. I think if they are going to put a team in Tasmania, there needs to be a Marvel Stadium type venue.
Big heater.
I don't think.
Close the roof, turn the heater on.
Keep the wind out.
Yeah.
I just don't think players are going to want to play their careers where they kick the ball and it blows back over their head.
Every second week.
And we've seen that happen in Tasmania. I don't think that's going to be attractive to players.
Okay. I disagree. I think Tassie's...
Just tweaking it quickly on the question, do they have the economy to back a team and carry a team on its own right?
Yeah, they do, as long as we stop mucking around and having half an effort. Other clubs transferring their games there. Have a Tasmanian team. I think we'll see what happens.
People would travel to Tasmania. There's obviously a lot of events in that space now, and they'd also go to the game.
You know what? And if your team is you're from Perth and you're playing in Tassie, it's a great weekend.
Yep.
No, it is a great weekend.
It's a great place. But
have you ever toured around Tassie?
I think it's broader, than just the city itself. There's economy involved. I don't think anyone wants a 19-team competition.
Get down to Cradle Mountain, stay overnight at the lodge. See a few Tassie Devils.
I went to Launceston a couple of times in 2002 to cover games there, and the Launceston people told me, "Bloody Hobart, what a hole!" They said, "If you can see the mountain, it's about to rain. If you can't, it's already raining."
Mount Wellington, they're talking
having said
about.
That, we went out to Waverley many, many times, and you would have attested this.
I grew
this.
Up just in the shadows
you know what?
Of Waverley.
Nothing. That
great
struck
part of
me
world.
In Victoria, as cold as Waverley.
Great part of the world.
Just being, you're talking Tassie's cold? Well, that's the equivalent for West Australians. Anyway, Tassie, not sure. In fact, Colin Carter's putting together a review or certainly investigating the prospects, the general economies of scale as to whether this would be a genuine prospect for the AFL. We know that the likes of Tim Lane and Matthew Richardson and Jack Riewoldt, et cetera, all pushing hard, but at the moment, I think 19 teams works as it currently stands.
Thank you very much. Heading to Owen from Harvard now. Ed Allen, son of Hawthorn Premiership player and inaugural Fremantle captain and caretaker coach Ben Allen, who was on the Hardball Gets pod last week, is showing promise at the junior level. But given his dad only played 98 games for Hawthorn and 47 for Freo, he's ineligible for father-son selection. For this discussion, let's assume Allen is good enough to go for the first three rounds of the national draft. Should the AFL recognise the enormous disadvantage expansion clubs have with the father-son recruiting and allow a club like Fremantle to make an application for special exemption for father-son rules beneath 100?
What about Hawthorn? Two games. You know, the same, it was Noah Anderson. Noah Anderson, son of Dean Anderson. Because Alan Joyce moved him on. I think he was on 98 games. We miss out Noah Anderson. Mounting a case for the Hawks.
New father-son prospect, by the way, for Fremantle. Born this week, Rocky Winter Duffield.
Okay.
Rocky. I like Rocky.
Son of Paul.
Rocky.
That's a real modern name, isn't it?
Grandson of Joe Spagnuolo.
Yes. I was speaking to Joe, a very buoyant Joe, about that the other day.
Yes, Joe was up and about. Paul and Cassie stayed down with Joe while they were waiting for Rocky's birth, their second child. But, of course, Paul played 171 games, so in 17 or 18 years' time. Hopefully he'll be kicking it around there somewhere.
Going back to Ed Allen, I've actually called a few of his games in the PSA and for the Claremont Colts. Good player, rangy type, just from first inspection. I think he's taller than his dad and certainly more slight and slender than his dad. I mean, been a real...
classic midfield.
Midfield, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, it'd be fascinating to see where that ends up. I guess the broader question was about the father-son, Duff.
So they have had things in place where if a player has played 150 games for certain waffle clubs, the local AFL clubs have access to their offspring under the father-son rule. So they have tried to offset that. It certainly has been better for teams like Collingwood and Geelong than it has
Geelong.
Been for Fremantle and West Coast.
Geelong. Scarlett, Ablett, Hawkins.
Alan, former best and fairest in the premiership side for the Hawks. Moving on now to, well, we're heading back to Canberra, so it's just convenient.
Mr. Speaker.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, JobKeeper and JobSeeker.
Congratulations, Skeet, on the official inclusion. It took Ronnie Wood about 18 years to become a full member of the Rolling Stones, so you've done pretty well after only a few months. I'm curious to know how much effort clubs putting into scouting talent in the remote communities of Australia. There is a huge amount of enthusiasm for the game in the remote communities, so there must be a fair amount of great talent available, but the location obviously has its limitations for draftee scouting. How do clubs go about finding talent from outside the urban areas of the country, and so some clubs can specialise.
Well, the waffle clubs have their zones.
Yep, and we don't look doing games for Claremont. Their Kimberley region is just outstanding, and so many of these Indigenous boys have just come down and light it up. I mean, the most recent who was on a list that I can just straight off the top of my head, Francis Watson was, and I did a story with him, and there are shots of him going fishing back in his home area region. And you can understand, it's just such a world away from coming to Perth. And he was obviously broke his leg, had some issues. But there is a ton of talent
parts. What? I have spent a fair bit of time up in the Kimberley region with football camps, with Rod Willett's Kick for Kids camp.
Okay, yep.
Spent a lot of time up there in a lot of the remote communities. And there is a lot of talent. You know what? There's a lot of female talent. Mm. So I used to be the poor bloke who'd stand there and they just took hangs on me, all the kids. So Rod would just throw a footy in the air and they'd just take hangs on me. He used to be battered and bruised by the end of the day. I tell you what, some of the girls up there, geez, there's some talent up there. So watch this space for the AFLW going forward.
So Halls Creek's got, what, three or four players in the AFL at the moment? Obviously, Petrescu Seaton is one. I think Farrar at Gold Coast, he's one as well.
Adelaide guy as well.
And the Gold Coast, I think, have got
Shane McAdam. Yep.
Speaking of the Gold Coast, I think they've got an academy up in the Northern Territory. I mean, not talking Western Australia, but yeah, it's tapping into those markets, which is a difficult task because you have to identify Duff and Quarters, not just the talent. That's just almost the smallest percentage. It's how you're going to assimilate these young men or women into a lifestyle so different to what they're accustomed
to. Very difficult. And there's a lot of kids who don't get identified, obviously. They've got all the talent in the world and they just don't get our talent because of the remoteness of the area. So I think we're getting better at it.
And just to go back to the Ronnie Wood comment, it's just nice to still be the Stones are still churning out some good numbers and, Quarters.
So what does that make?
Let me down to the pub a couple of times. And
Jagger?
Oh, has to be. He moves like it, doesn't he?
Well, I'll happily be Keith Richards.
Well, there's
an apt comparison.
Very apt. What a great analogy from Quarters.
I can picture you both at the Shoe at about 3 a.m. trying to solve the world's problems. Yeah. Just staying with that question, I must admit that it seems from watching the Colts and doing a lot of live stream and stuff, it seems like there potentially would be a lot of talent missed if a player isn't lucky enough to get a PSA scholarship and move down here, because that sort of gives them the opportunity to play in a Colts program. And other than that, if you're not, you'd probably stay up.
And it's a really good It's a really good point that's made by even some parents or football people saying, you know, if you're not in the PSA and get that luxury of getting a scholarship, etc., you might have a very talented young male or female who just can't get the eyeballs of a recruiter or somebody in a position to give them that next chance. And it is something that I'm not sure how you address it. But
you're going to still a chance to play Colts, though, aren't you?
You are, but... You start a bit ahead of the rest if you've got that luxury of going to a PSA school, which I think is wrong, but unfortunately at the moment, hopefully that's being blokes like Rob Willett can help address that situation.
We've got so many good questions. They're all very direct and avoided muck-ups from me today, but we've just got the rapid fire to finish off. Luke from the Cayman Islands. Oh, wrong one. All right. So this is yes and no answers. Rapid fire. I've got some sort of like rapid
fire. So what order are we doing it in?
Let's go just answer at the same time, and if there's, we'll discuss slightly if there's an error or something. So here we go.
So the century.
All right. Freo to make the top eight this year. Yes or no?
No.
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 Three no's. Richmond win the flag this year?
No.
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 Three no's. Quarters would have played AFL if it weren't for his incredibly small hands.
Yes. No.
Oh, okay, contention. No. Josh Garlop set shot from 10 metres out, yes or no?
Yes.
Maybe.
No.
The mailbag disagrees. 2018 grand final, best game you've ever ever watched?
No.
No.
No, 1992.
It's yes, no, Duff.
Qualifying final, West Coast Hawthorn.
I enjoy that. We can look it up. Kane Corns, yes or no?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
BT's insane commentary, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, we have to say yes.
Yeah, he's out, so yeah, definitely.
Olympics should go ahead, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes.
Yo.
Jurassic Park, yes or no?
Yeah.
No.
No.
And team in Tassie in 3 years, yes or no?
No.
Would like to see it, but it won't happen.
Interesting. Yes or no?
How come Duff gets to give a monologue on each answer and we have to go yes, no?
Most credentials. Get back in your
can
box,
I, fickle. Can I grab that soundtrack for my Spotify too, by the way?
For your Spotify?
Yes, please.
Yeah,
sure. Late night love song with Lise just on the couch, I reckon.
Oh, it's a lovely bit of music.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck with your tipping over the weekend. Good luck with your team. We have been brought to you by TabTouch. Get closer to the AFL action with TabTouch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call Gambler's Help on 1800 858 858. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back on Tuesday.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlop, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on The Game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.